everyone. This is Haley, co-host of the Pause Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Neil Shah, Chief Medical Officer of Maven Clinic, the world's largest digital clinic for women's and family health. Neil is a practicing obstetrician, a visiting scientist at Harvard Medical School, and founder and board members of numerous nonprofit organizations focusing on addressing women's health. Neil, who joined Maven in 2021, brought with him a unique perspective shaped by his initial skepticism about digital health, rooted in his experience as an obstetrician where tactile interaction is crucial. In our conversation, Neil emphasized the importance of value-based care and how Maven is pioneering this model in women's health. Neil also highlights the need for cost-effective yet personalized care in fertility treatments. We discuss the disparities in maternal health outcomes and the efforts Maven is making to overcome them. He shared insights on integrating cultural humility into care delivery and medical practice design. Our discussion concludes with Maven's recent expansion into Medicaid and the company's goal of providing accessible women's and men's health care. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the Pause Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Haley. Thanks for having me.
Lovely to hear. Well, very excited for today's episode as this is our second time hosting Maven on the Pause. Back in June 2020, we had the pleasure to chat with Kate, co-founder and CEO of Maven, right after the company raised the Series C round. 4 years later, Maven is already at Series E and have raised $300 million total in funding. What an amazing progress for us to witness. You joined the company as the Chief Medical Officer in 2021 with a series of initiatives and strategies in expanding women's care and addressing health equity and outcome. I can't wait to learn more about them today. Before we start, we have a fun icebreaker question that we like to ask our guests. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I think I always wanted to be a doctor. I'm an Indian kid from New Jersey, so I very predictably went to medical school. I think my idea of what being a doctor was changed over time, but I think the idea of being a doctor was always something that was attractive to me.
Wow, I love the passion from early day, and it's so amazing to see you kept on and continue growing this mission. Thank you for sharing. So Neil, I'd like to take us back to July 2021 when you decided to join Maven. How did this decision happen and how have your previous experience influenced your approach to lead the clinical product strategy at Maven?
Sure. I've been following Maven like many people for a long time. In fact, I listened to the podcast from the Series C and had been talking to Kate Ryder, the CEO of Maven, for many years, going all the way back to the early days. Honestly, I was never skeptical of Kate. Kate always seemed like a great entrepreneur, but I was skeptical of digital health from the beginning, partially because I think, you know, I'm an obstetrician and obstetricians are very tactile. You can't deliver a baby through a screen. So I just didn't understand it. But along the way, I think, of course, it was great to watch Maven's progress, particularly, you know, as an HBS case study on Maven going from being a direct-to-consumer business to becoming an employer benefit. It is almost now the canonical example of how digital health companies do this. And right around that time is when I started to pay much more attention. I had been advising a lot of purchaser coalitions, and I saw the direct-to-consumer value, but it was really when, like, Bank of America decided that they wanted to partner with Maven that I thought, okay, there's some clear value to them. They have actuaries. They're taking a rigorous approach to evaluating. He invited me to be on the advisory board of Maven. I had never joined the advisory boards of any for-profit companies as an academic, but Maven was my first, and I decided to make an exception for Maven because I was just curious. I wanted a closer look. And then in 2021, as you said, Kate was looking for a chief medical officer. My full intent was to help her find one. So I was, Kate, what is a chief medical officer? And she was like, that's a really good question. So we started to go back and forth and talk about what the role might look like. And the more we talked about it, the more I felt like I wanted to just sort of jump in whole hog. So I gave all my grants away. I left my academic appointment and I joined Maven about 2.5 years ago.
Wow. So you mentioned over the past decade, fertility is no longer limited within what women think about. Can you describe how the practice has evolved in your time at Maven, especially in response to recent trends like the recognition of fertility more as a family issue or in the same-sex marriage?
Yeah, sure. I would say certainly the fertility industry has evolved a lot in the last decade, but even in the last 2.5 years, in which I've been kind of perched at Maven to help support people who are building their families, it's changed a lot. it's changed from a technology standpoint. I mean, there's some things that are pretty evergreen in building families. Like you still can't deliver a baby through a screen. The fundamentals of as an obstetrician delivering a baby are pretty much, they've been the same for about a half century at least. By contrast though, fertility, man, it's right at the intersection of genomics and AI from a technology innovation standpoint. So there are always new ways of delivering services. And then the whole ecosystem has evolved as well, such that it used to be that assisted reproductive technologies were very rarely utilized and you needed a clinical diagnosis of infertility to access them. Now it's the case that they're much more widely utilized and you don't necessarily need an infertility diagnosis. For example, a same-sex couple doesn't need an infertility diagnosis to benefit from IVF. And so the benefit space and the design of the whole ecosystem has kind of evolved to recognize that and be more inclusive.
Yeah, that is very insightful to hear, especially around how a traditional practice evolves as technology and innovations push forward nowadays as we think more about AI and how AI can push for more equity and outcome. So Neil, curious, during your tenure, what have been the biggest challenge and success in Maven's journey to expand and diversify your women's health practices? Maybe share with us one example each.
Well, from Maven's standpoint, I mean, there's a lot of contemporaneous examples, but you know, we were just talking about fertility, and Maven has always been had a strong care management product and service, meaning one of the things that we do is we make it possible for a person anywhere in the world, any time of day, to connect with a doctor or another type of expert within an hour. That capability, when you deploy it at scale, is really powerful in terms of making people healthier. That's always been the kind of chassis of the product. Within the last year and a half or so, we went much deeper into the guts, I would say, of the healthcare ecosystem by administering fertility benefits. So in the same way, a lot of people are probably familiar with the fact that they have their health insurance, and then like vision and dental are carved out separately from the rest of it. Increasingly, fertility is going in that direction as well, because health insurance companies are positioned to administer standard medical benefits, not benefits that need to be flexible and accommodate all the different pathways to parenthood for same-sex couples, from those who may want to adopt or use surrogates. That's not like what health insurance companies do. So fertility is separate. And we decided that we wanted to administer the fertility benefits ourselves. That means that we steward the dollars of the purchaser. We use it to pay the clinic. We have contracts with, we then have to integrate with the payer. We have contracts with pharmacies and pharmaceutical companies. And that capability and complexity is something that we were able to stand up very quickly, and also design in a way that I think is one of the very few examples in healthcare where all the incentives are aligned. So nobody wants IVF specifically. What they want is the shortest pathway to a healthy baby. And so we made that our North Star, and we set up a product where if somebody is struggling to get pregnant, but the reason is they have irregular cycles and they could benefit from a $5 thyroid medication to fix that, that's what we do. We get them the $5 thyroid medication. And if they need IVF, we get them that. But by adopting that approach, we are being better stewards of the dollars of the purchaser. We are helping the person that we're primarily trying to serve get to their healthy baby faster. And we're even helping the IVF clinic because they are all at their capacity limits and they don't need more volume. They need more qualified volume. So we send them the people that will actually benefit from their services. And truly everybody wins.
Yeah, deepen and widen the practice to administrate fertility benefits yourself. I'm sure bigger growth definitely comes with bigger responsibilities. You just mentioned how Maven is taking the risk in saving costs for the patients. So to shift our topic towards the value-based care model, an area that you really emphasize at Maven, could you share with us how is Maven pioneering this model in women's health in terms of medical strategies and implementations? And what impacts have you observed so far?
Yeah, sure. So value-based care has almost become a buzzword. I wrote a textbook on value-based care, actually. It's the McGraw-Hill textbook that's, I think, used a lot in classrooms. And my understanding of value-based care was really the classroom understanding. And it wasn't until I was in this role that I understood the mechanics of how it's administered, especially from a health insurance company's perspective. But fundamentally, value-based care is about getting paid for making people healthier as opposed to doing more things to them and holding yourself accountable to that. And in a sense, to do that, you take risk. The thing is, though, you're not really taking risk if your ability to produce healthier outcomes is reproducible. And reproducibility is the purpose of science. So the reason that I came to Maven was I saw an opportunity to take my expertise as a scientist and deploy it in a business environment where if we were going to, for example, take responsibility for a Medicaid population, really underserved part of the country, we had to be really confident that we could make people healthy and that we could do it in a reproducible way. Otherwise, we would lose out from a payment standpoint. So that's what we're aiming to do. And we take risk really across our lines of business. Maternity is kind of most obvious space where value-based care can have a lot of impact because there's a lot of harm from overutilization. 1 in 3 human beings gets major surgery to give birth right now, and 1 in 10 of their babies goes to the neonatal ICU. That's crazy. It's really expensive. Like a day in the NICU, in the ICU, is a week at the Ritz. It's really expensive. And it's really morbid. It causes harm. And so less of that is good for everybody. And so again, that's sort of how it works in the maternity space. And then in the fertility space, honestly, I think we're inventing what value-based care and fertility looks like. But one of the things that we've done is in a subfertile population, we've committed to a 25% natural conception rate, which is about how many people you should expect to be able to get pregnant. So rather than just saying, we're going to send you to an IVF clinic, we're committing to getting a lot of people pregnant naturally, which again, is better for everybody.
Yeah, well, looking forward to your potential publication on value-based care on fertility, something that Maven is innovating these days. So you also mentioned over the years, some women's health treatments have often been considered as expensive and therefore not considered. Could you share, how do you balance the need for cost-effective care with the need to provide personalized yet comprehensive treatments for fertility patients?
Yeah, you never want to skimp on what people need. But I think the problem with in the fertility space, it's truly the Wild West, first of all. There's huge variation in quality of services and outcomes, and not very good data or scrutiny or regulation or accountability. And of course, that needs to change. Also, the way most fertility benefits administration solutions work, they kick in at the moment that you're going to the clinic. And so it's kind of a foregone conclusion. That's the service that you need, as opposed to starting with people who are actively trying to conceive or even pre-contemplative about starting a family, and then helping them optimize the conditions that will help them get to their goal, which is the shortest, most affordable, most efficient, and safest pathway to a healthy baby. And oftentimes it's a simple medication, or honestly, we have a coaching program where we help people time when they're going to ovulate, and it's extraordinarily effective.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is offering the diversity and the variety in products so people can choose what really fits for their need in the moment.
So Every pathway to parenthood is different. So I think part of the challenge with the current fertility industry is it's very monolithic, and it's very much like an assembly line for anybody who's experienced it, especially the first cycle of IVF. Everybody is treated like a cog in a wheel, which is not what it should look like.
Certainly. Neil, few of your biggest advocates have been surrounding health equity, color of care, and reproductive justice. I felt especially heartbreaking and shattered when watching The Color of Care, the documentary that you participated in and produced by Opera, on how people of color suffer from systematically substandard healthcare in the United States. In your opinion, what are the biggest hurdles in achieving health equity in women's health specifically, and how is Maven working to overcome them?
Well, just some statistics. Maternal mortality in the United States is going up. So an American today is 50% more likely to die in childbirth than her own mother was. And if she's Black, she's 3 to 4 times more likely to die. So that's a massive disparity that's persisted for a while. And maternal health is one of the few areas where income isn't protective. So there was an economic study in California that was done last year that showed that the wealthiest Black woman in California is worse off when it comes to maternal health than the least wealthy white woman. So again, it's a massive disparity. It's not just that racism exists in maternal health, it's that maternal health is one of the clearest indicators that racism is a clear and present danger in the United States to people's lives, probably even ahead of incarceration rates, education rates, and things like that. So we have a massive problem, and it's challenging to unwind. Fundamentally, we have to get down to the studs structurally of what a healthcare system looks like. One of the advantages that we have at Maven is that we have a virtual service that doesn't depend on physical proximity. So just to give you an example, we take care of people in Arkansas, and particularly in the Delta region of Arkansas, a lot of the people who are pregnant are Black teenagers, and very few of the obstetricians and nurses and midwives who are there share any lived experience with the people that they're serving. By contrast, at Maven, 40% of our providers identify as people of color, which means that we can match people with care on the basis of having the right technical expertise, but also having the right lived and embodied experience to really affirm people and make sure that they're really seen and heard.
That is very inspiring to hear. And just by diversifying the racial and then the different provider composition to make your patients feel more at home. Could you share some insights into how Maven also integrates cultural humility into the company's care delivery and medical practice design? And what does cultural humility mean to you personally?
Yeah, let me answer that last question first, because in medicine, there's a principle of first doing no harm. That makes a lot of sense. I think everybody would agree to that. But in our sharp focus on safety, we treat people's experience of care as a secondary luxury. That's how the conventional healthcare system works. That's why we subject people to hospital johnnies and terrible fluorescent lighting. I mean, all of that, like, it's, we sort of treat it as not substantive, because it's in the important thing is to like keep people safe. What we've learned, particularly when it comes to racial and geographic inequities in our country and gender inequities, is that attending to people's experience is the way that you make them safe. Because what happens over and over again is that women, and particularly Black women, express concerns about how they're feeling, their symptoms, their pain, and the healthcare system doesn't respond. It doesn't listen. So cultural humility is affirming people, listening to them, hearing them. It's not complicated. The way to do it, part of it is structural and making sure that we have a diverse workforce, but there are no silver bullets here. We hold ourselves accountable. First of all, everyone who comes in, we are very intentional in making sure we have a diverse workforce, but then every single person gets trained in cultural humility, which includes things like implicit bias training as part of their onboarding. And then ultimately what matters are the outcomes, and we hold ourselves accountable to it. So we have a dedicated director of health equity on my team, and her job is to set and monitor the business KPIs. So there's no outcome that we look at where we don't disaggregate by race and geography and look at the disparity and think about what we could be doing to close it.
So affirming people, listening to them, and addressing their needs wherever they feel. Taking two steps forward in a perfect world, what would be your ideal 3 to 5 year roadmap in terms of this topic? How would you like to see Maven progress and innovate in this space to address the systematic inequity?
Well, look, an app isn't going to fix structural racism, but Maven Clinic is not an app. It's the ability to take the devices that everyone carries around in their pocket and turn it into a portal, into an accessible human service. And when we think about the root causes of inequity and disparity, so much of it comes down to not only not having access, but not having access to the right kind of help at the right time. And so the next 3 to 5 years for us, of course, there's a lot of specific things on the roadmap and a lot to unbundle, but fundamentally, it's about continuing to scale this capability. Right now, we cover 17 million lives, which is a lot, 175 countries, but there's a lot of half the planet, at least, are women. And then everybody is born and everybody's part of a family. So part of our ambition is to make sure that we're delivering this capability and service to as many people as possible.
Thank you for sharing and continue raising the voice in the industry. This is certainly a long battle that we have to continuously fight hard for. Same thing on the health equity note, could you discuss Maven's recent expansion into Medicaid and how this aligns with your goal for accessible women's healthcare?
Sure. About half the pregnancies and deliveries in the United States are within the Medicaid programs. And so part of getting to scale is to make sure that we can work within Medicaid systems. Even on the commercial side of our business, though, about 25% of our commercial business, our membership would be Medicaid eligible. And so as a health services researcher and as a professor, I dichotomize the world into Medicaid and commercial, but in the real world, it's much more nuanced. And just to give you an example, the world's biggest technology company has about 1.2 or 1.3 million employees, which means they have a baby every 20 minutes. And about 20% of their workforce are white collar technology workers, and about 80% of their workforce are warehouse fulfillment workers who are actually quite vulnerable. And so it's much more nuanced. So Medicaid means a lot of things. From a care model perspective, honestly, it's about finding people who need more care and support and giving it to them. And for the people who are the most vulnerable, what we have to do is make sure that we are identifying them and we know who they are without making assumptions and are asking the right questions. For example, We know that social determinants of health are really important, but they're rarely identified in most clinical settings. So we created a universal social needs screen. We published it through peer review. It's only 3 questions. We ask people about their material needs. We ask them if they're safe, and we ask them if they're lonely. That's it. We ask that to everybody. What we find is that the plurality of people have at least one social need, which changes how we follow up with them. So there's a whole component around the care model, but then there's a different component, which is probably material to your listeners, which is like the business strategy for Medicaid, because the willingness to pay of a Medicaid plan is not as high as a Fortune 50 company. And so from a unit economics standpoint, the only way to make that work is to put substantial fees at risk. And the only way to make that work is what we talked about, is to have reproducible healthcare outcomes and to be really vigilant in how we report on those outcomes and monitor them.
It's really great to hear how you combine the medical knowledge to your understanding towards the population, as well as the business perspectives into the practice. So looking ahead, what are some of the recent innovations or development at Maven that you find most exciting or promising? And what are you most looking forward to in 2024?
There's so much. Within the year, we have spent a lot more time thinking about menopause. And Maven isn't a condition-based company. We're a phase of life company, which means our job is to really understand the context of people's lives when they're going through key phases of the reproductive journey. And we've focused historically on the beginning of that journey, but not that menopause is the end, it's just another transition and it can take years. But it's not just about hot flashes and hormone replacement therapy. It's equally about bone health and heart health. The time period when a lot of people are going through menopause is the same time period where there's a lot of recommended health maintenance screening from colonoscopies to mammograms. And so I'm really excited about serving that population and effectively creating an on-ramp into the rest of the primary healthcare system. Because it's during these phases of life when you're building your family, when you're pregnant, and when you're going through a menopausal transition that you start to re-engage with the healthcare system in a more meaningful way. And that's when we're best positioned to identify things that we can do to help you be healthier. So that's one of many things I'm excited about.
Totally. As we look to wrap today's episode, for our listeners who are a lot of MBA students and professionals in the healthcare plus business space, what keywords you'd like the audience to take away from today's conversation? What actions they can take to continue affirming their efforts in addressing equity, outcome, and quality in this space? And lastly, how can listeners find you?
Well, I'm easy to find. You can Google me, I guess, but I'm on all the social channels, but I've started to spend a lot more time with Substack and LinkedIn. But Substack is a really fun medium because it allows you to think in longer form and actually I find it to be a place where you can take the kind of knotty issues that we're wrestling with and have a community conversation about it. So we have a newsletter called The Preprint at Maven. And we call it The Preprint because scientific publications often release preprints ahead of full peer review. So that's the same approach that we take. We actually provide an early preview into our data and our product insights and to what we're seeing. So The Preprint on Substack. But I guess parting words of wisdom, the folks who are listening to this podcast, I imagine that you're really committed to making healthcare better. One of our mottos internally at Maven is that better care can't wait. So you probably also feel that better care can't wait. And healthcare is really complicated. So although you probably have a lot of seemingly common sense ideas, as you go through the course of school and as you go through your entrepreneurial journey, there's a lot of people who are going to tell you why those ideas may or may not work. And you should always listen and understand those perspectives, but those are never reasons to not do something, because people could have told Kate Ryder, including, and that's something I did, a million reasons why Maven Clinic wouldn't have worked. But I think the mission was worth fighting for, making sure that women and families have the care that they deserve. And there was a true north and there was a relentless commitment to figuring it out along the way. So that's what I would encourage.
So a note to all listeners, definitely follow Preprint on Substack following this episode. Neil, I want to thank you so much again for joining us at today's episode. It's truly a pleasure to have you, and welcome Maven back again on the show.
Thank you, Haley. My pleasure.